Clay, I'm going to write you. Well, there you go. You got the he's got the bottle off.
I couldn't get the top off the bottle. It was very frustrating, but here we are.
It's a good metaphor.
Have a little Romulan ale.
Yep. For people watching on YouTube, you can see Clay drinking blue windshield washer fluid.
True. There's no guarantee that's not what it is, honestly.
I don't think it was that bad of an episode. You don't need to drink antifreeze yet, Clay. Let's get into Voyager's fifth season before we start chugging. We bought we live in New England, and Amy went out the other day, and the car thing said that the washer fluid was low, and she went into a gas station. She bought it, and we put it in the car. And the next day, when I tried to run it, I was like, oh, it was like the pump gone or something on the washer fluid. No, once the car warmed up, it was working again. It just froze. The point of the story is, what kind of place in New England sells anti-washer fluid that is summer mix in...
Yeah.
At any time of year. They just sold a summer mix. They had no antifreeze in it. It's just blue water that they gave you when it froze. So.
Yeah.
Lesson learned? Yep. No.
No.
Why would you be able to buy it? Why do you buy non-winter?
Yet, that's all they had. Yeah, I mean, who cares? I mean, it does the same thing, right?
Well, it doesn't freeze.
Well, no, but I mean, if you're the gas station who's buying it,
right, and I don't think it's any more expensive. I don't think it's more expensive.
Living up here,
there's the same price.
No real benefit to doing summer. I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah,
sounds delightfully zesty, though.
I mean, I guess it's less. You could live in Arizona and spray the shit into your eyes all day, and nothing's going to happen to you. But up here, we live dangerously. Welcome everybody to our discussion of Hunters. The episode of Star Trek Voyager. It is the 15th episode of the fourth season of Star Trek Voyager. It came out on February 11th, 1998. Written by Jerry Taylor, directed by David Livingston, in universe date 51501.4, 2374. In this one called Hunters, Voyager receives a message from Starfleet containing letters from the crew's friends and or family. And people are very excited to hear the news. They couldn't send voice messages. They could send the doctor.
Hmm.
And they can slowly send text messages to each other. So we're figuring out what the relay's capabilities are at this point. Well, we're back with the space relay. We're back at the Hirogen.
I'm never going to get over the fact that they can send the digitized matrix of a holographic life form.
Yeah,
over 62,000 light years. But if you want to read your letter, you have to get your own individual
pad,
iPad to read it on. Neelix is coming in with like a stack of iPad. You can't just like forward that shit.
That's the ultimate insecurity. When you're Chakotay and you need to take this to your ready room, you don't need some file that's on the mainframe of the CPU computer or whatever they're going to say to be hackable and let people
like
know
how
that your friends are dead.
It's like how all the machines that trigger the nuclear bombs still running floppy disk or something because you can't hack them.
Yeah, that's right. The old floppies, the ones that were legitimately floppy, not the new fangled ones. This is Hunters. We're continuing the. I think they're called the Hirogen. I think I'm pronouncing that right.
I think that's right.
Tom,
what's his
one
name?
Of them says
yeah,
it.
Kim says it. Kim Harry says it. Yeah. Also, isn't it weird that they kept the name floppy disk? When they
even after it went hard,
the smaller, harder disk.
for a hard disk.
they
provided it.
If they had gone from vinyl records to CDs, and they had continued to call them vinyl records or LPs or something.
Yep. It's weird. Just the same with the little save icon in any application makes no sense to anyone born after 1990. I don't think they're like, what the fuck is this thing? How does this mean save? You know, like having
save
the
icon?
Image. When you click save on like your Word document, it's a floppy. It's a disk.
Oh,
you haven't used it in 50
right.
years, but it's still
right.
the thing. It's like playing music, and it's like a reel-to-reel image. It's like this is incredibly dated. It should be something else. What'd you think of Hunters?
I really liked this episode. This was basically the episode I kind of wanted to see in the last episode. I liked all the stuff they got into with the characters. I thought the letters was a good device to kind of amplify the anticipation that they were getting at in the previous episode. And I thought it was a good catalyst for some good scenes and good conversations. I thought the talk with Jane Wayne Seven about her maybe having a family on Earth was really good. I thought the Paris and B'Elanna scene was great. That was probably one of the better scenes of the season for me, because it was two characters with very clear points of view on a subject, creating drama out of their difference of point of view, which is exactly what I talk about all the time, what that the show doesn't do.
Very nice.
I don't think that I assume this is the Hirogen come back, I assume, again.
Yes.
How many more times?
Next episode.
Is that the last time?
No, I think they continue for a little while, but they certainly continue for the next couple of episodes being in it.
I didn't think they made much of an impact. They kind of just sort of came and went. I guess I kind of like that they're non-copyright infringing predators, but
yep. We had the face predator true. Was in that episode before, and this time they're just like, let's just go with what the predator does.
That's why Murphy was asking me, like, did you get to the episode with the predators in it yet? And I said yes, because I thought he was talking about that other alien species.
The old one,
he was talking about this. Yeah. Yeah. yeah, it's kind of not a great design. It looks kind of like a 90s fighting game character or something.
Yep. You know what I like about them? And I don't know if this is the small successes you have with Voyager. I was thinking, you know, I don't know if Star Trek has ever had an alien race that their defining trait is that they're much bigger than everybody else.
Yeah.
like the Nausicaans are kind of tall, but these guys are deliberately set up to be very large. They're just much bigger than everybody else. And before we've had, you know, they've kind of gotten around it by saying that the Klingons and the Vulcans are like 50 times, they're like ants to humans. They're like 50 times the strength, and they can, you know, pick up 50 humans or whatever. These guys have the very funny scene where he like picks up Tubok by the shoulders and like throws him into the wall. And that's all good. I think their design is kind of silly, and they don't really have a thing yet. At least it's like they're just the predators. They're just hunting people. They get a little bit into the ultra violence of he's like, I'm going to cut his stomach open and take out his intestines for whatever reason. But outside of that, they are fairly derivative of the Predator. And they do the thing that the Predator smartly avoids, which is that they talk to each other. So it seems stupider when they talk to each other.
What about when he says, what the hell are you? After, what the fuck are you?
Motherfucker.
Yeah, I was expecting a much more elaborate system of war paint to be involved when he did that one thing on his forehead. I was like, oh, cool, what's that going to be? It's just one swipe.
Just one. And he does blue to the opposing team.
It's like a kindergarten class, really. Where they just kind of like dip their finger in one color and smear it on your face, and that's kind of it.
Yeah. We can get into the Hirogen, but I think that the better thing is the letters aspect of this, because I would agree with you that I think that this one does what Message in a Bottle doesn't, and just as I mentioned in the Message in a Bottle, this is a retroactive episode to me that I'm going to retroactively go back and say Message in a Bottle is a 2, because I think that this is better, and Message in a Bottle is a 2. This one does the letter thing, and I like the letter thing. I think I like about 50% of the letter stories, and the other 50% are constructed in the sense that I don't know why this character is doing that story. Sometimes it's not natively stuck in. Like I like the Janeway one quite a bit. I think that that's the most important one. That shows like the bittersweetness of that one is important. That's the one that feels like it had the most impact of the ship being gone, right? Like the rest of them are just kind of like catching up with you. It's like, good to talk to you. I like the Tuvok one just because that was played perfectly, I think, for a Vulcan character. So I really like that one. I'm less enamored with the Tom and Harry ones. Just because those feel a little bit more stock in a lot of ways, of like, you don't know my father, he's a dick. And it's like, okay, well, you know, like, and I'm not, I don't, for, you could argue one way or the other. I think it's just not a great Tom Paris story in the sense that it feels like it's plastered onto a Tom Paris, where the Tuvok and the Janeway one have been pre-established as things that could happen, and they logically came out to their conclusion.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I do think that the Harry one makes kind of perfect sense for him as a character, because he's there's really nothing interesting about him other than being like a cornpoke kind of.
Yeah.
And so he gets a very cornpokey kind of letter. Like his story isn't the letter. His story is whether or not he's going to get the letter, right? So it doesn't really even matter what the letter says. Paris, I agree. I felt the same way, where it's like, is this something they've talked about before, that Paris has daddy issues?
I don't think so. I know that we see his father coming up, so I'm sort of tainted. I don't remember. I don't think they've ever brought this up before, that his father's an admiral. I might be wrong, but I don't remember it.
Yeah, and so that one feels like it's, like you said, it's just kind of like tacked on to Paris. However, I think it does serve its purpose pretty well, which is being the foil for B'Elanna's story. She technically doesn't get a letter, but she's involved with the one Chakotay gets. And I think his nonchalance about whether or not he's going to get one or whatever, I think is a good counterpoint to, it's not that. His story is like less the letter and more the fact that he is happier on Voyager than he was at home.
Yeah.
And I think that's the important thing. And that's the thing that is the good catalyst for the drama with B'Elanna, who is dealing with the fact that all of her friends back home have just been killed. And so like there's a disconnect there, which I think works pretty well. But I agree that it's the actual substance of the letter that he gets, and the way they resolve it at the end, where he's like, yeah, I don't know, maybe I kind of would have liked to read it. That's a little bit, stock.
I would totally agree that the important thing is that it's the contrast of, you want some characters to not want to get home as much as some of the other characters, and I think that that's very important. I still think that the daddy issue thing is tacked on to get to a good result, unfortunately. Yeah. It's kind of a made-up thing to give you a good story, but the made-upness of it still bothers me a little bit.
Yeah. I was thinking as I was watching this, it would be really interesting to do an episode from the point of view of Earth when Voyager comes home. Because I was just thinking about how interesting it is, where it's like, these guys are going to be gone for so long. You could conceivably have, like, let's say you have a woman whose husband is on Voyager and is gone for 10 years. You could conceivably have that person come back and then get back together with his wife and have to explain, or choose not to explain, the fact that in those 10 years he had a wife, maybe he had a child, maybe they died, there's a whole separate thing that, like, you can't even, it's completely so utterly disconnected from anything that's happening on Earth. Like, that stuff is really fascinating. Like, that's some of the meat of this show that I don't think that they get into enough. And
they
so
should have done
this
a
episode,
runner. Like the mirror universe in DS9, they should have had a runner of just one episode a season is about the people back on Earth who are wondering about Voyager. That kind of would have been interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think you could even play with time too if you wanted to. Because, I mean, I think there's something interesting about them coming back. And, we just did an episode where Janeway flew the ship into another ship and blew it, and like, none of that shit mattered. So do an episode where you explore some actually interesting ideas, that are based in the concept that you're playing. But this episode did get me start thinking about that. And I was like, this is all pretty, pretty good stuff.
Yep. It did. It's maybe its biggest, biggest success is reconnecting us to the fact that they aren't home and that they're trying to get somewhere. And I thought that it's a success at that, because it's like you're saying, it was kind of shocking, really, to sort of like have it be prominently realized for you again. Be like, oh, of course. Mm-hmm. Like, what else are these people thinking about? So too much of the show is just run of the mill characters talking about their business as they're walking through the hallway or whatever. Yeah. It's not really this problem of like this whole, maybe it's not seven seasons of 26 episodes, but there's this whole range of like the variety of response to getting home and what that means and like how people are changing on this journey that the show is not going to get into, but it's all there if you wanted to do something with that idea.
Well, the thing that I found funny is I was watching this and you get to the scene where Chakotay comes in to tell B'Elanna what was in his letter. And he's like, I just got some really horrible news. And B'Elanna's like, what is it? And he's like, I don't really know if I know how to process it yet. I had no clue what it was supposed to be. Like, I was like, is he a father or something? Did he find out he's got a son or his family's dead or whatever? And then he's like, the Maquis have all been wiped out. I was like, oh, of course. I totally forgot about that shit. So, and I was thinking, like, let's say you're watching Voyager as it's playing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you missed season one.
Voyager.
Would this scene make any sense to you? Because they don't even really like talk about that stuff.
And you've after not the first been watching season. DS9 either, right? You're just watching Voyager. Yes, yeah.
So, like, you know, if Chakotay's like, the Maquis have been entirely wiped out, and Bob's like, what? All of my best friends? You're like, sorry, quick question.
I didn't realize she was
What is their connection? So it's just one of those things where it's like, it's really good that they touched on it here.
Yeah.
But it's picking up plot threads that they kind of have let waver. And I mean, four seasons in, you got to let that stuff cool off no matter how good your show is. But still, it was something that surprised me.
We're being told that Tom's dad has been mentioned before in the series, but he hasn't been fleshed out. I mean, I would have treated the Maquis thing the same way as I'm treating Paris's news here. My impression was this is the first time that we're learning about this. I would have treated the Chakotay Maquis as the same thing. It would have the reason that that storyline works for me is because it ties into the larger franchise in a kind of interesting way of like the separation from the war is kind of an interesting comparison between the two.
Better usage of the Dominion War this one than the last episode.
Than the last one. Yeah. For the comparison to Message in a Bottle, this episode treats their discovery of this relay station in a way that feels realistic as opposed to a slapstick adventure with the doctor and his buddy on the other ship. That was not a good use of it. And here it feels appropriate. I feel the Chakotay stuff is kind of a foul tipped. Like they made contact with the ball, but it didn't really get into play in the way that I thought it probably should have.
The B'Elanna stuff is better. I'm fine with it because it is a, you know, it hits B'Elanna on base if we're going to continue the metaphor, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, as far as Chakotay goes,
not as
it doesn't really,
Chakotay's greatest moment in this one is at the end when Janeway is, you know, maybe I'll start sleeping around. And the camera keeps cutting to Chakotay. And he's just like, do you remember all those episodes we've had in the past four seasons where it's been me and you and it's been awkward? And Janeway's like, I wonder if there's anyone on this ship that I would like to date.
Does Neelix have any friends?
Just cuts back to Chakotay going,
Chakotay moment. Sure, Catherine, we can go to the party as friends. No problem. That's fine.
I'll give you a ride. Do you need a ride? Let me give you a ride.
I'm not even going to go to the party. I wasn't invited, but I'll drive you and pick you up if you need me to.
I can just wait outside. Just you come out. I'll just be out here. If you want to go home, I'll be waiting. That's Chakotay, the great Indian warrior. The other letter things, the letter ties into the relay, I think. I think what we've learned is that the Hirogen did not build the relay, right? That's my understanding, is that they consider it theirs just because they use it, but it's not theirs, because why would they use or build that?
It was built by a great big fat man hundreds of thousands of years ago called Graviton Eddy.
Yeah, that's the... Because wasn't the... Weren't the Dyson... Not the Dyson spheres. Remember the Zindi... spheres, weren't they built around an energy source, or am I just making that up? I can't remember.
Sure.
Something it's the same like idea. That. Yeah. It's the same idea as what they do here. I thought that the relay was kind of a neat, it felt very TNG, but in a good way to me, this idea of finding this thing. It was kind of neat. It was neat enough to the point where I was shocked that Voyager fucked it up and didn't feel particularly bad about destroying this 100,000-year-old technology system.
Yeah, they kind of glossed over that at the end. They're like, we made it out alive. Yeah, nothing works anymore, but we're fine. Oh, great. Okay, cool.
I mean, are other species, I'm just picturing other species are finding this and using it, and they're like, oh, thank God, I phoned home. I'm at, you can find my location at, and the whole thing just like shuts down, and Voyager's just looking at it going like, well, we saved our lives, and I'm sure that everyone else was benefited for the better, too. Yeah.
It's like they drove their ship into a row of telephone booths, and they just dominoed their way down the thing, breaking all the telephone booths.
It's gone. On our merry way.
And for all you young kids, a telephone booth is something that used to be freestanding in the world where you could make a telephone call.
It was like a Starlink.
I'm sorry.
Stuck in
the I don't need to say that. There's nobody listening to this show that is young enough to not know what a telephone call
Our demo is the 35 to 45 on YouTube. Anyway.
We're called the Rotary Boys.
Is that our club name?
Yeah, you didn't get the card?
It was it hurt my finger. Anything about anything else about the relay is just kind of a technology thing. I shouldn't have been surprised. I was a little bit surprised that it's just gone at this point, I'm assuming, because they can't reboot it. But it was surprising that it just came and went so quickly. It served its purpose. It's huge.
I was gonna say it's kind
a surprising
of a
thing.
Yeah, it seemed like it was kind of a big deal.
Right. It goes far. It goes, it stretches all the way to the Alpha Quadrant. And maybe that's the, I don't know if the show should have focused on it. Like, I imagine if Picard and the TNG crew found this thing, right? Yeah. I think that they would have a pretty, like a sense of awe of it that I could understand to be like, this is kind of remarkable that they found this thing that's so old and it went so far and it's some power that they can't even comprehend. Voyager fittingly treats it as a means to an end.
Yeah.
But also doesn't really care. There's no Picard-esque concern about the damage that they've done to this thing in their attempt to get home. You know what I mean? It's right. A very distinct difference between the shows. I don't think that it's unearned. I think Voyager can be a little bit more flippant than TNG can in this situation, but it's a difference between the two series.
I think the issue with this thing, though, is what else do you do with it, honestly? Like, let's say they don't blow it up, right? Like, what does that get you in the next episode?
Yep. Just more letters, I think. It's like the slow trickle of letters,
So maybe some recipes or something.
This is the kind of porn we're watching on Earth right now, guys. Wow.
Harry Kim in his room is watching that one centerfold picture load. Pixel by pixel, like comic book guy waiting for the Janeway picture to show up.
I like that.
And it all blows up like right under her boobs. No.
Kim is the one pushing back against whatever they're threatening to do. He's like, not yet, Captain. Not yet.
Can I just say, can we wait? Maybe 700 megabytes.
Captain, I've got half a blue bar here. We need a few more minutes.
Nobody pick up the phone on the ship for the next 25 minutes.
I thought the letter stuff was strong. I thought that it was good. It was useful. I liked a lot of the character work, at least 50% of the character work. I really loved the Tuvok one. I thought that was great. I thought that it was played well, and Russ didn't screw up the performance while reading the pad either. Like, he read it, but he just sat down and kind of like read it as if it's like a historical novel or something. He's just going,
I was surprised
I
was surprised that they didn't do the Interstellar thing where one person just like starts crying hysterically as they're learning like that their son is.
Just reading the pad in the background or something. Yeah, people breaking down. Yeah. No, they don't do anything crazy. It's a very slow process. I just like Neelix with that box handing out the stupid things. Each person gets a pad, which is very funny. The Hirogen are the other aspect of this, I guess. So we know they're going to come back. They come back in the very next episode. I like their size. That's pretty good to me. This episode has another Voyager specialty, which is the contrivance of a shuttle goes a distance I don't think is very far, but Voyager has no idea what's happening to it for some reason. Where the when the shuttle goes and gets attacked by the ship, and Voyager's just like, well, we haven't heard from them. I wonder what's gone wrong. And then they get the beacon, and they're like, oh, something. It's just it's a weird sci-fi Star Trek thing of like, the Voyager can see the relay station from that distance. Why can't it see the shuttle, and why aren't they in constant communication with the shuttle?
Yeah, I mean, they have on-screen capabilities from like half a light year away.
Yeah.
I don't know why they wouldn't be able to see the Hirogen ship shooting at the other thing, you know?
Chasing it around. I don't know. Any other thoughts about it? Did you like their... I thought that they were effectively poor man predators, if that makes sense. Like, it's kind of a backhanded compliment. I thought they were pretty okay at it. Could have been worse.
Excuse me. I thought it was very funny when they beamed that rubber skin suit onto the ship. And like, clearly they could only show a piece of it because it looked ridiculous. But it, like, oh my God, this is just the skin. Its entire internal organs have been ripped out. And it's just like a Halloween mask on the table.
just a deflated mask that someone's pressed down on. Yeah.
Interesting idea, though. I actually thought I thought the way that the episode was going to go was when they got the message in, and Janeway was like, "This is, I'm not sure what this isn't from Starfleet." I thought it was going to be messages to the skin suit guy who had been dead.
Oh, okay, yep.
I don't know where that would have gone, but that was my first instinct. Was, oh, they found this ship, the dead guy in it, and now they're getting, you know, messages from this guy's family or something. But
yeah, clearly, in retrospect, it doesn't make a lot of sense. I thought it was the Hirogen talking to them, which makes ultimately no sense because of the things they were saying. But I thought that's what, because when they read it, they're very confused about what the words mean, and I thought that that's what it was, but it is not. I don't know. Any potential in the Hirogen at this point?
I don't know.
Effective villain?
Yeah, fine. I don't really know what they're up to. You know, do they have a ethos or anything, or are they just...
No, I think it's just predator stuff. It's just a hunter threat.
Voyager did just destroy their porn downloading hub, so I can understand why they would be mad about that, and maybe
they're
going to
be super wound up when they run into them next. You thought these guys get grumpy now? Wait till you see what happens.
Tell us, Voyager, you are from Earth. Tell us of the one they call Bob Guccione.
On the scale of, I think it's an interesting distinction between DS9 and Voyager is that all of Voyager's, Enterprise does this too, all of Voyager's antagonist creations that the show has come up with are gimmicks in a way. Like they're all Enterprise had this problem too where the Zindi were just like, this is a bug man, this is a werewolf. Yeah. It's like, okay, what the fuck does that mean?
It's the DS9. Family Guy Stephen King problem when he goes in to pitch his new book and he's like, what about a haunted beer can? Woo-hoo.
It is that kind of a thing. In contrast to DS9, where, you know, the Dominion were the creation, but they're set up as an evil mirror version of the Federation, like a very authoritarian version of the Federation. And there's like... But within them, there's like a slave clone dichotomy. There's a sort of like subservient to a god, like viewing a god as kind of like your ruler and stuff. There's the authoritarianism of the changelings and like how they view the protecting themselves is to eliminate everybody else around them. You know, there's some viewpoints. All the gimmick, the Voyager ones are just like, we're just aggressive gangs, basically. Like The Hirogen. What was the I can't remember what the troll guys' names. In the first
troll
season,
troll guys. The brown skin. Kazon.
Kazon. The Kazon are kind of like that. The Vidians had potential, but they never really got into them with their disease problem. Well, it's just a long way of saying the Voyager creations are built around, like, these guys are the hunters. These guys are the warring gangs. These guys are the skin people. They don't really have a point of view or a very interesting, like, civilization yeah. behind them. They just have a thing that they do.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think it's might be a little bit of taking the wrong lesson from the Borg a little bit. Because on the surface, the Borg seem like, oh, yeah, they're just, you know, they're robots and they're zombies and shit. But they have a fairly fleshed out concept and how it relates to the ethos of Starfleet and all that kind of stuff. And whereas, yeah, a lot of these guys, I think the problem is, one of the problems anyway, is so many of these races on Voyager are just one and done because Voyager is constantly moving.
Yeah.
You know? And it, so it's, you don't really, I mean, I guess you could, on TNG, it didn't really stop them from establishing races, but but that was a lot more about like the politics of the Federation and stuff. So you're dealing with people you're going to see anyway, versus this where it's all new stuff. So it's difficult to set up characters who are really a counterpoint because they just keep cycling through them. And the times that they do bring them back, they just seem to not take the opportunity to do that either, because like the Kazon were never really interesting.
Yeah.
And these guys don't really seem to be that interesting. But I get
the sense that it totally makes sense that the Voyager would not run into the same species season after season just because they can't.
Right.
They're going too far, and we've complained about that. At the same time, the way that the show dumps its antagonist species feels more like they're like, this isn't working. Give us something new, as opposed to we've escaped their space and we no longer have to deal with these guys anymore.
I mean, the Kazon kept showing up well after it seemed like Voyager should have been out of their
space. It's been multiple years of traveling and you're still bumping into them, and it doesn't make any sense. Yeah, I'm not super impressed with the Hirogen. I think that their sets are kind of cool, and they're horrific in a way that Trek normally doesn't do this. Like, they are the, in a way that we always say that, like, the Borg assimilation is a very clean process except for first contact. The Hirogen are like a violent, nasty group.
Right.
And I wish that they were written in a way that allowed them to have something other than Tuvok to say, this species has no moral center, which seems to be an understatement, but I don't know. I guess there's only so far you can push them.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, who knows? Maybe the next episode they'll give us a long-winded explanation about their entire culture and government setup or something, and the civil war they're currently in
that we now
find ourselves in the middle of.
Yeah, we'll find their prison planet. All right, I guess that's it for Hunters. Next week will be Prey, which is a very thematic carryover into the next episode. So we will now go to Patreon Thoughts. If you support the show at patreon.com/thepenskefile, you can leave thoughts about upcoming episodes and we read them on the podcast. You also have like 200 plus podcasts that you can listen to on the Patreon.
So many shows.
So many goddamn podcasts. First, oh, sorry, I have to load more comments. Ow, no, sorry. I can't edit this out either. Kyle's always the first name. Hold on one second. If I keep clicking load more comments, I eventually click on the first person's name and it opens up their profile and I just see their goofy little face staring back at me.
Let's just read Kyle's profile then. Let's air out all the laundry.
Who? What the fuck? What am I looking for here? This is Hunters. There we go. Found it. All right. There's 9 of them. Kyle Barrett says, Hunters, when Neelix says he'll treat the letters like gemstones, I hope he means with care and attention, rather than imagining smuggling them across the borders by shoving them up his arse. He watches people read those letters like my sister stares at me while I watch her new favorite YouTube video to make sure I laugh in the right places. I'm sure she's showing you our YouTube videos. The first half of this episode is fantastic, with the letters fleshing out each character and leading to insightful interactions. I wish we had more context for the friends and family back on Earth, although if the show was produced 10 years later, it'd have the opposite problem of being overloaded with flashbacks. If only the writers had the confidence to just explore the personal reactions instead of adding a lame Hirogen confrontation for whom the prop department stole some paint pots from Bob Ross in the neighboring studio. 4 titanium whites out of 5. Excellent reference to titanium white.
Mm. One of the things that, I know it's stupid because it's a TV show and they only have so much money or whatever, but I couldn't not keep looking at the face masks they were wearing and watching
the
them like
face masks.
Yeah. Yeah. And watching them kind of like bob and stretch as they talked, because those were clearly made out of like rubber.
Yeah.
Whereas it's supposed to be like a metal faceplate, you know, like the Bane mask or something.
Yep. Yeah. It's just, it is like if you just like put a like a red Solo cup and like tied it around your face and it just kind of wobbles as you're talking. Yep. That's the limitations of their design. Nice color blue in the armor, though.
I have been kind of baffled by some of the design choices on this show, because I feel like they go from very subtle, arguably too subtle, when they just kind of, you know, give them a weird ear or like a weird nose ridge or something. They go from that to, what if we just took everything we could find and slapped it on an actor?
Yep.
You know, like, it doesn't feel...
It's related to how many of the aliens you see, clearly.
Oh,
there's only 2 Hirogen in this, you know. Yeah.
But just, like, from a design standpoint, you know, like, the Borg are so cleanly designed for how busy they look.
Mm-hmm.
And the Klingons are very cleanly designed. The Romulans are very cleanly designed. The new races on this show feel very much like, what do we have in the closet and how many of them do we have? You know, like the Kazon, the Kazon have a design to them, but it doesn't feel, it feels very all over the place, where it's like giant hair, orange skin, baggy pants. Like it, I don't know.
I think there's nothing
slick or elegant about the designs of any of these creatures. Don't get me started on the skin guys. I hated those guys.
Yeah. Well, I think I'd have to argue that the Vidians are designed the way that they are portrayed. Like, they look the way that they should be.
Sure.
I think that the Hirogen suffer from, I don't know why they're wearing this stuff. Like, and the stuff that they're wearing, like, if you talk about the Romulans or the Klingons, like, the Romulans are always neat because I like their clothing kind of fits their personalities in a way. Mm. Like the Klingons too. Like the what they're wearing kind of like reflects their outlook on things. The Vulcans are like that. The Vulcans always have like very like simple robes and very like uniform. The Romulans have very angular things that they're like very rigid in what they do. But the Hirogen, as hunters, I don't understand why a hunter race wears that as its thing. You know, you'd think it would be less gaudy or something. Like, it would be they would be more streamlined or something like that. But no, it's probably just to hide the fact that they're portraying them as larger than life or whatever. But it's a weird choice to have them wear that kind of suit.
Hmm.
Hunters from Taxol Bear, the Hirogen return as new Voyager adversaries. Where did they get their space tech from? They possibly just stole it. But even then, the Hirogen, just like the Klingons, are another species that could consist of Bronze Age petty tribes and not be industrialized to any degree. I never got particularly excited by their hunting shtick. Groppler John Zorn says, wouldn't it be funny if we had a character who made everyone uncomfortable? Ha ha ha, look everyone, he wants to read everybody's letters, but they don't want him to. Teehee. Here's an idea. Have the captain lightheartedly discover that Neelix has been previewing the letters and have her consent to him reading Mark's letter out loud. Whose face should we zoom in as we learn its nature? 3 more flailing swings at a softball right down the middle of the plate, but out of 7 seasons and 168 episodes of this disappointing crap.
That's there's a lot of math in that rating.
there's only...
Steiner math.
There's only 100 episodes left of the show. Bob,
Have you ever seen that wrestling promo from the early 2000s where Scott Steiner tries to break down his probability of winning a triple threat match.
No, like off the cuff or something? Is that the
problem? Yeah, he's doing a promo backstage. I don't know if anybody knows if he did this on purpose or if he was just didn't know how math works, which is fair because he's cutting a promo on live television and having to do you know, fractions in his head. Professional wrestler doing fractions on live TV. But he's like, you know, in a one-on-one match, I have a 50% chance of winning. But in a triple threat match, my percentage is now 33.333%. Now, if the two of them team up on me, then I've got a 20, 25, and one-third. But if you don't count the fact that I've got this, then you've got an eighth. And it just goes on for a long time. It's unbelievable. If you nice. Google Steiner math on YouTube, you'll find it very quickly.
There's a GIF out there. Scott Steiner, his
terrifying
his body, his body like upsets me, makes me ill.
Yeah, too big.
Bob J. Kester says, "Hunters, this episode subplots are much better woven together than average. In the way B'Elanna sublimates her grief into caring for Paris and Kim, only to let it out later, feels parallel to the Star Wars scenes where Leia comforts Luke for losing the mentor he just met after her planet has been blown up."
That's
Leia had
point.
No time for her really... sorrows, but yeah, hunters make time for 4 out of 5 of them.
I don't know if I ever considered that in Star Wars, how she's like, it's too bad that your friend is dead. And
yeah, everyone is, she knows
her entire dead. Planet's been eradicated.
The line was supposed to be read sarcastically, but Carrie Fisher missed the stage direction. Point Extra G says, "Hunters, the heart of this episode are the letters from home. The different reactions from the characters cover the whole spectrum, anticipating the letters and getting happy news, some not so happy, some not wanting letters and being content, others like Tom eventually wanting to see their letter and then not having the chance. If the Maquis had stayed as a major part of the series, Chakotay's news from Voyager's sister show would have made it hit a lot harder. As for the Hirogen, this is more just a setup for upcoming episodes." Changeling says, "It is amazing how different this show has felt this season. If this were season one, the whole episode would have been about getting the letters, and at the end we would never know what they said, other than everyone is just waiting for them to come back home and there's no need to worry. But here it turns what would be inspiring and hopeful into bittersweet and tragic. Great episode. 5 Bondage Gear 7s out of 5.
Oh yeah, we didn't even talk about that. When the Hirogen tie them up using like leather straps from like a Judas Priest getup.
Not the most efficient type thing. I did like I do like 7 talking to the Hirogen. I think that's kind of neat. Like her sassiness is very nice in not sassiness, but it's like a her like lack of what did I describe it? Her, just sort of her like upfrontness about her like not liking things is very anti what the rest of the cast does when they meet a new alien. So it's that sort of Borg superiority complex coming through. But I like her talking. She's like, "You are a crude species." it's funny things to say to them.
She had an interesting episode for her overall. Mm-hmm. Like she doesn't do a ton, but I think the scenes with her are pretty good. From the one with the doctor, which made me want to slap the shit out of that doctor.
Oh, where he's, but, yeah, you know, he's talking about what a hero he was. Yeah.
Yes, it was up to me. Who I can, and the scene with Janeway, and even the way that B'Elanna
her shuttle
was
ride with Tuvok is great. I love her talking to Tuvok. I think that's good stuff.
Yeah, and the B'Elanna and Harry stuff, where she's like, you know, everybody can tell you want to have sex with this new woman. Like that was kind of interesting too. Like I think she continues to be a good utility player for the show.
She's a good add to it. JC Superstar says, "Hunters, I feel I'm in the minority here, but this episode was just okay to me. The Hirogen themselves are part of a B plot that apparently has little or nothing to do with the A plot, the receipt of the letters by the crew. Everything we need to know about the Hirogen is in this episode's title. I also have zero connection to Harry Kim as a character, and so I can't feel anything for or about him. 3 out of 5. Final comment, Artoria says, Hunters, too bad they used the predator species in Nemesis. If any reappropriation should have been used, it would have been them as the Hirogen, along with a cryogenically frozen Schwarzenegger and Glover carrying a vintage 17th century flintlock. I would still put my money on them predators over the Hirogen, a very underwhelming threat. That aside, I thought the main plot about the letters was good. It reminded me a little bit of Castaway when Hanks comes back, only to find that the woman he had hoped held hope for had moved on when both worlds collided with reality. Such is life, as they say. 3 letters from home out of 5. Thank you, patrons, for leaving your thoughts. I think we're like a 3.5 on the patrons at this point. A couple 4s and a few 3s for Hunters. Interestingly, Message in a Bottle was much more well received by the patrons, which I think is an interesting
is right.
That's a very interesting thing. I thought this was a lot better than Message in a Bottle. Still not great to me. On our scale of 1 to 5, I'm going to give this one a 3. I know you usually go first. I'm going to give it a 3. I think it's a strong 3. I really like the letter stuff. I think that the letter stuff is really good. The Hirogen is just fine and not bad enough to really knock the episode down. But I live in this episode for the letter stuff. Janeway's problems, I really enjoy. Tuvok's, I thought was excellent. What you were talking about, the setup for the other characters, even if I don't buy the setup for them, I like the problem that they were trying to portray in the episode. So I give it a 3 out of 5. It's a strong 3. I think it was a pretty good episode of the show.
Yeah. I was on the fence, but I... See, my first thought was 4, but yeah. I didn't know if that was too much of a pendulum swing from the last episode, which I so
did not
disliked.
Like. Yeah.
Especially since they're doing a lot of stuff in this one that I wish they had done in the last one. I'm going to say 4. I'm going to give it a 4. I think this is one that I would say if you're going to watch, if you're going through, what the fuck is the name of the show? Voyager?
Voyager.
If you're going through Voyager, I think this is one that you should watch. I think this is one of the more important character episodes of the whole series, honestly.
Yeah.
Because it is, it's the one time that they've really touched out, you know, reached out to what life is back on Earth, and it has actually made an impact on them in a way that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, that the characters can actually talk about. Agreed. Yeah. I'll stick with a 3. Strong 3. Clay gives it a 4. And that's it for Hunters. The next episode is Prey. Thank you, everybody, for listening. If you want to support the show, patreon.com/thepenskyfile is the best way to do it. patreon.com/thepenskyfile. Clay, do you have anything you want to say before we go?
Check out Rotten Horror Picture Show on Patreon. We're going through the Halloween movies. January was Halloween. February is Halloween, too. March, Halloween 3, so on and so forth.
So on and so forth.
Yes. I do want to say I'm actually, I just guested on a podcast that was started by my cousin, who's a big film noir guy, called Shadows of Noir, where he and I talk about the film Kiss Me Deadly, which is a very fun later era film noir based on the Mike Hammer books by Mickey Spillane. And it's very... Mm-hmm. It's a very heightened movie that makes a lot more sense if you think of it like a David Lynch movie, because if you're familiar with David Lynch and specifically the more like crime oriented stuff that he does, it feels like he's lifting whole cloth from this movie. So recommend it, and you can check that out. That's on wherever you get your podcast from. Shadows of Noir is the name of the show.
Shadows of Noir. That's it.
And he's going to be joining us on Rotten Horror to do Night of the Hunter while Amanda is away. And then Wes is also going to be joining us for a couple. So,
yep. That might already be happening at this point.
Yeah,
so.
All right. Sure.
If it is, it's out there. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thank you for supporting the show. We'll be back next week with Prey. See ya.